The nectar entered the fontanelle, and her whole body shook with joy. Welcome back. This is Buddhist Books Podcast, episode 320, Padmasambhava, part 23, in which we will continue reading The Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava by Yeshe Tsogyal. We'll be reading Canto 49 today, and depending on how long Canto 49 is, some of the cantos are longer than others, we may be reading Canto 50, and then beyond that we will just have to see. Hope everybody's doing well today. If you would like to start with Canto number 1, with Padmasambhava Part 1, you can check out the Padmasambhava playlist, and you can really start anywhere you'd like, or perhaps start here. That's fine, too. Right. I suppose, without any further ado, let's get to today's reading, shall we? Canto 49. The kingdom of Uddiyana is brought to the Dharma. Then Padma contemplated that it was the time for the conversion of Uddiyana. So Dakinis of the four orders bore him thither in a palanquin. Appearing in public with Mandarava, he asked for alms. Quote, "This is the former prince, the murderer," end quote, said the royal ministers, and they reviewed their recollections of this murderer, this son of the king. Quote, "He abandoned Basadharha, his accomplished queen, and killed Upta's wife and son. And here he is again, in the company of a beggar woman. What catastrophe will he now bring upon the country? His aspirations go not to the good, but to evil." End quote. A little like St. Paul. Just kidding. Okay, sorry. Agreeing together not to let the king know of their plan, the ministers gathered loads of sandalwood and an equal number of measures of oil, and the couple was bound together to be burnt, and the pyre was set to fire. Though usually such a pyre ceases smoking in 7 days, this time, after 21 days, the smoke had not yet disappeared. The king sent men to see, but nothing could be seen. Wondering whether it could be Basadharha's former husband, he asked her, and with jealousy she answered, quote, "That fellow, my husband? Oh no, it is only a man," end quote. But later, she whispered what she really thought into the king's ear, and he reflected, quote, "If this is an incarnation, I think he will not burn," end quote. When, with all his court, he went to see, the sesame oil, rolling along the ground, spread out like a lake. In the middle, a great mound of charcoal supported a lotus stalk, and beautiful, shining, wafting perfume and coolness, on the lotus the intertwined couple was dancing. Those who recalled the old days now sought their salvation in his mercy, beseeching the being with the death's head rosary. The king and the rest were struck with amazement. Neglectful of rank, all Uddiyana gathered. And the goddesses of the earth, the Denma, with their retinues, exalted and glorified the descendant of Tambula. Quote, hum, he is born of the lake. He has come to Udiana. There he was a prince and worker of prodigies. Detached from the world, as his method he chose playfulness. To him, Padmagyalpo, obeisance and praise. He came to India and presided on the diamond throne, triumphed over the fourfold Mara, equaled all the Buddhas, and assumed the guise of a bhiksu in accordance with the rules of the code. To him, Shakya sang, obeisance and praise. He came to Zahore and presided in Magadha. In the Chili Grove Cemetery, he practiced necromancy and made 12 baskets shine in the depths of the heart. To him, Padmasambhava, obeisance and praise. He came to the Tirthikas and presided in the Garden of Joys, filling the horizons with his voice and his renown, and clarifying in people's hearts the formulas outer and inner. To him, Dorje Drolod, obeisance and praise. He came to Vaisali and presided in the funeral land, neither conceiving of repose nor seeking contemplation. Indivisible and containing every direction, he extended as far as heaven. To him, Padma Todtrang, obeisance and praise. He came to Kashmir and presided in Simhapura, winning over all who stayed to listen. And the greatly beloved was like father and mother. To him, Lodin Chog said, obeisance and praise. He came to Khotan and presided in the purple garden of poplars and widows. At the crystal egg rock, spreading his arc knowledge, A-R-C-H knowledge, one word, like the sky, that's a good word. For the benefit of others, he put forth the fruits and leaves of his acts. To him, Nyima Odzer, obeisance and praise. See, he has different names for each phase he went through in life, and yet he's known by all of them simultaneously. Anyway, he came to Nepal and presided in Yang Leshod Grotto. He mastered in the castle of Yakshas the 8 classes of the gnomes of pestilence, brought to submission the 3 worlds, and dominated the 3 realms. To him, Senge Tradog, obeisance and praise. He came to the heart of Tibet and presided in the enclosure of Tiger's Cave. Emanation of Amitabha, he protected men, leading a multitude of the Dakinis of the 4 orders. To him, Newa Ngodrub, obeisance and praise. He came to the Rakshas and presided on Tale of the Yak Island, tamed the ogres with red faces on the glorious Copper Mountain, and bore off the living to felicity. To him, Padma Jongne, obeisance and praise. And 3 times toward the right they made a ceremonial circumambulation, and having bowed before him, disappeared into the earth. Then the king invited him to the palace, and Padma began to explain the unified precepts, that ocean of the law. Sitting and preaching the Dharma for 200 human years, he established the whole kingdom of Udiana in the Bodhidharma. Indrabhuti, the queen, and their court, amid 500 pyramids of offerings, entirely penetrated and conquered the supreme transcendent knowledge of the history unabridged of the lives of the guru of Udiana, Padmasambhava. This is the 49th canto, the kingdom of Udiana, brought to the law, sealed oaths. I understand came out relatively recently, within the past year or two, I think. It's a pretty good one, isn't it? There's a lot of different takes on it. But anyway, the link to, if you want to hear that later, it's in the description. That was very interesting. So yeah, Udayana is where my vague recollection, Padmasambhava, when he was young, before he had that name, was found inside of a large lotus surrounded by four other lotuses of different colors, which opened, and there were children of different unusual skin tones in each of the other lotuses, and if I recall correctly. And when he was a young man, he was 8 years old looking when he was first discovered in the lotus. So the story goes. And then at one point, I remember from, there's a book called The Lotus Born, which is probably up on the screen. And I don't know how, these are all variations on the story, so where with some things, you know, I'm looking for like what really happened. With this one, it's kind of like, well, who knows, but this is the story, and it's a fascinating story. He was dancing up on a rooftop, if I recall correctly, and he kicked a rock, and the rock had hit somebody and killed him. And then when they asked him about it, he said, oh, it was his karma. And so then he was banished. So when they talk about him being a murderer, I had assumed that was what he was referring to, but then it was listing two or three other people. So I'm going to have to myself go back and re-listen to some of the earlier episodes of the Padmasambhava series here on Buddhist Books Podcast. And one of my teachers, my dad's old friend had told me about when Mandarava and Padmasambhava came together, and he had told me that her father had tried to set them on fire, but that the forest or whatever where they had where he had set them on fire turned into a lake. I think he was conflating, because it had been decades, I think, since he had read this. When he was put on the path, he was told to spend 3 years studying the Tipitaka before he delved into Mahayana and Vajrayana. And then this was one of the books that he strongly recommended for tapping into Tibetan Vajrayana, Nyingma Vajrayana, that being the what Padmasambhava established, basically. And the other forms, the more recognizable forms, the red hat and the yellow hat, kind of were built upon that foundation, but in some ways were like, okay, well, let's reel it in a little. Let's get a little more monastic. I'm trying to remember the name of the guy. There was a guy who came from Nalanda University, and someone told him, you may be a master of all this knowledge, but when it comes to real life outside of the walls of Nalanda University, you know nothing, Jon Snow. And so that he took that to heart, and then he brought some texts with him, and he went to Tibet, and established a sort of monastic Buddhism that became, I wish I remembered his name. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So yeah, it's interesting to have it clarified. So it wasn't Mandrava's father. They had a different issue, if you remember from a few episodes ago. But this incident happened in Padmasambhava's hometown. And I think, and also when it was explained to me, it was again from the hazy recollection of someone who had read this decades before. But my attention to detail, I at least want to know what it says, even if I'm not all that concerned about like the historical accuracy of it all. I mean, 200 years, I mean, I take it as it is. It's a fascinating story and probably rooted in an actual guy. And perhaps an exaggeration of real things that occurred. But she was from another place that we figured out last time was in Bihar. And I had thought that she was from present-day Pakistan, same as Padmasambhava, but he was from present-day, what we now call Pakistan, Udiana. And she was from a place which today is in the state of Bihar. So, very interesting. All right. Well, I will keep reading. Moving on. That was a good one. I like how it summed up the story very nicely. It was like a looking back of like, these are all the stories we've heard about him so far, and all the names he was given so far in the text. All one after the other. Nicely done. Okay. Canto 50. Those of Kashmir and the good drummers of India are led to the Dharma. Then Princess Mandarava erected in Udiana Heruka temples, and as a Dakini who could change her form at will, now a fairy, now a jackal, at one time a tigress, at another a rainbow, she set out to rule over the multitude of Dakinis, so that in future times the Buddha's teaching would not cease to exist. As circumstances required, she reappeared as a princess. Now, the one from Udiana, Padmasambhava, reached, in the white plains of India, the country of the good drummer. So she stayed there. Oh, okay. All right. Interesting, because we know Padmasambhava goes on to meet a few other ladies who become his students. The word used in English is consort. Because of the unfortunate timing of when it was translated and the perspective of the people translate, just that was the word they chose. So like not wife, but partner, student, girlfriend. I prefer girlfriend, but anyway. Okay, so she stayed in his hometown. That's how, so she started in Bihar and ended up in Pakistan. He started in Pakistan and ended up in Tibet. Interesting. Good to have these things clarified, I think. Okay. Right. Now, the one from Udiana, Padmasambhava, reached in the white plains of India, the country of good drummers. I tend to think that this is Rajasthan, but I could be wrong. It's just the white plains, does that mean desert? Well, we'll see. In the town where wool is steeped, okay, to a weaver and his wife, a daughter was born. You remember the very first page of the very first canto? Sorry, I'm just a little bit of an aside here because I want to remember, because I don't quite have a photographic memory when it comes to things like this. So, yes, okay, so the very first line of the very first canto, Princess Mandrava. We know about her. Now she's staying and ruling the Dakinis in Udiana. The second line, Kalasidi, in the town where wool is steeped. So we're about to meet Kala, what I just said. I turned the page so I couldn't read it. Kalasidi, is that right? I'll continue. To a weaver and his wife, a daughter was born. When the mother died in childbirth, the father reflected that the child could not be fed, so she too would die. So he took her to the charnel ground with the mother. But Princess Mandarava adopted the form of a tigress, and coming near, she saw the child suck at the dead woman's breast. So I guess she went with Padmasambhava. I don't know. Okay. Disregard everything I thought I came to realize in the previous few minutes. Okay. Moved with compassion, the tigress suckled the little girl itself. And in order that the child should not cease to cling to the mother, the corpse being cold, the tigress warmed it. As the corpse grew withered, days and months went by. By day, the little girl gathered cotton and spun it. At night, she stretched it and wove it on the loom. She was called Kalasidhi, of where wool is steeped. When the time had come to convert the region, Padma took on the form of the bhiksu Saukhyadeva, led the maiden into the forest, and there expressed the attainment of the purification of the four attachments. So that's what the kids are calling it these days. Sorry. No, I'll just keep reading. Then, after some time had passed, he said, quote, "There is in this land a son of the good drummers, whose name is Norbu Goleb. He is the shepherd boy of a substantial householder, and day after day, urging on his flock, he will come to the forest." End quote. Accordingly, every morning Norbu began to bring to the bhiksu and his companion yogurt made from milk, so that he had milked into the leaf of a tree. What? Yogurt made from milk that he had milked into the leaf of a tree. Ah, okay. One day the bhiksu said to Norbu, quote, "Every morning you give me what I ask for. What would you like? Tell me. And whatever you desire out of everything men find tempting, I will give to you. If you have holy desire for the Dharma, I will give you that." End quote. Quote, "I do indeed desire the Dharma, but I have nothing to offer in return." End quote, the boy said. To that, the bhiksu replied, who's actually Padmasambhava, going by another name now. Quote, "You have given me yogurt. Now this is the repayment. Every day you have given me yogurt. Now this is the repayment. Come early, and I will teach you the Dharma." End quote. So he came, offering the yogurt that had been milked into the leaf of a tree. And he received the secret of evoking Vajrasattva, a benediction. And after the deity had been evoked, soon, when they looked, the bhiksu and his companion could see between Norbu's eyebrows the syllable HUM. And they called him Maha Homkara Guru. His exposition of the unified precepts and of the five sacred tantras was remarkable. He obtained the attribute of eminent beings, the attainment of the winged feet. He moved at a height of 1 cubit above the ground. As he excelled in the practice of the three perfections, Haya Griva appeared on his head. He had the perfection of the heart, and on his heart appeared a Vajra. He had the perfection of actions, and there appeared on his forehead a turquoise double Vajra. He had the perfection of the virtues, and the 9 openings emitted 9 sheaves of 9 rays, and the favorable signs adorned him. Now, having come down once again one evening amid the mother animals of the flock, his master announced, quote, "Vajrasattva is appearing," end quote. And he made a seat of cushions in the middle of the hamlet. The shepherd said, quote, "Master, I am only the shepherd. What harm is there in that?" End quote. Quote, "No, not a shepherd. You are Vajrasattva," end quote, was the reply. All those who hastened thither revered him in the highest degree, and the land of the good drummers was led to the Dharma. To the west of the good drummers, in Kashmir, at the Oxen Hill. Okay, so the white field might not have been desert, it might have been snow, and we might be talking about Ladakh? I don't know, well, I'll just keep reading. To the west of the good drummers, in Kashmir, at the Oxen Hill, there was a daughter of the king Dharamsoka, Princess Dharmabhiti, perfectly beautiful, a true nymph, and almost divine. Having fallen asleep, she saw a dream, how a handsome man, white in color, from whom emanated a white ray, poured on her head a chalice filled with nectar. The nectar entered the fontanelle, and her whole body shook with joy. As a result of this, she became indisposed and later brought a son into the world. I would ask what a fontanelle is, but given the context, I think we all already know. Husbandless, in her shame, she abandoned it amid the sands. Now the householder Daiden Korlo, Happy Wheel, governor of 2,900,000 towns, had a dog trainer who carried away the little child, who was weakly turning its eyes this way and that. The householder Vima Lamitra said, quote, "Alas," and end quote, and clutching the child to his breast, he bore it off. Quote, "I will take it to my wife, Pure Caste." That's his wife's name, I guess. End quote. Days, months, and years went by, and the child grew. When he was 5 years old, he asked his father and mother for permission to enter religion. Quote, "You may not so bind yourself," end quote. Thus they refused. But studying with the king of learned men, Padmakarpo, he learned thoroughly the five branches of knowledge. Having attained to profound erudition in the Dharma with the doctor Sumitra, he at last formally entered religion. And under the name of Shakya Sribhadra, he established the entire kingdom of Kashmir in the Dharma. Okay, that's a song called Kashmir, for those who didn't know. Of the history, unabridged, of the lives of the guru of Udayana, Padmasambhava, this is the 50th canto. The good drummers of India and Kashmir led to the law. Sealed oaths. Another version. It's the first version I learned. When I learned to chant the Vajra Guru chant, it was while that version was playing in a little brick village, I don't know, like what you might call projects if you were in a different place, but it was just near Bodhanath Stupa. Anyway. Canto 51. The conversion of the Tirthikas in the land of copper and the land of gold. Then, desiring to overthrow the religion of the Tirthikas, Padma came to their land of copper and began to debate with 500 of their teachers. We've seen that show, right? One person versus 500. Never mind. Who, unable to sustain the argument, said to him, quote, "Prove your power," end quote. So he entered the dense thickets, and as he was carrying out the propitiations, the Dakini, tamer of demons, instructed the victorious one as she handed him a leather box, quote, "Tame them," end quote. From within the leather box came influences harmful to life. And 7 days of malicious incantations by the Dakinis brought about disaster. Over the deep forests of the Tirthikas, thunderbolts were unleashed by magic. Most of the Tirthikas were exterminated by a devouring fire, and those who escaped accepted the Orthodox faith. Not that Orthodox faith. Sorry. Orthodox means correct. So Catholic means universal. Words' meanings sometimes change, and sometimes you can hail back to their original meaning just to confuse people. I know I do. I'll keep reading. Now in the land of Serling, in the middle of a great city of the heterodox, the not true religion, right? It's, they don't use the word, when they translate this into English, they don't use the word heretical, they use the word heterodox, meaning like not correct, right? Okay, in the land of the heterodox lived King Namke Shugchen, strong as the sky, and Queen Chandridala, although I wouldn't be surprised if it was to be pronounced Chandridala. Sometimes they do that. They use a C when they should use a CH. Anyway, I don't know. They had a son, Nima Shugchen, strong as the sun, one-eyed, of a greenish complexion, like a peasant. So the earlier in this same tome, Padmasambhava had explained the backgrounds of the five Dhyani Buddhas, and the one with green skin, Amoghasiddhi, was said to have been from an unscheduled caste. So here it's saying his skin was green like a peasant. Untouchable. So they say unscheduled today, to be polite. Maybe that's what we're talking about here. So the red of skin, not like red, you know, red, like red, solid red, like the color of something red, right? Blood or whatever. Are the merchant caste. From what I understand, I mean, just based on what Padmasambhava said, it added a layer of context, because I knew their names and the colors of their skins, and then Padmasambhava added their caste. So based on that, the red are the merchants, the blue are the warriors, although that particular Dhyani Buddha was of a royal line, but maybe royalty and warriors go hand in hand, which kind of makes sense if you've read Plato's Republic. But anyway, the red are the servant caste, the yellow are the merchant caste, and what other colors are there? Green, we went over green. And the white, like albino, fully white, not like me white, you know, but like white, are the Brahmins. So there you have it. Okay. All right. Just wanted to possibly add some context to that line. One-eyed, of a greenish complexion, like a peasant, limping with the left foot and left-handed, stinking of camel, his skin putrid, such was his lot. Fearing to let the prince be seen, they kept him shut up in the palace. When he had grown up, he said to his father and mother, quote, get me a wife, end quote. Quote, alas, be quiet, son, end quote. This one's fun. Oh no, not end quote. They're still talking. In face and body you are ugly, and should you be married or not, the Dharma can be depended upon to grant you all you need. End quote. Quote, I desire neither the gift of the Dharma nor its holiness. Find me a wife, or I will start a fire and throw myself in it. End quote. Sounds like a problem that solves itself, if you ask me. No, I'll just keep reading. Sorry. A firebrand was in his hand, and he could not be caught. Quote, son, since you are turning to crime, get yourself, in any way you can, a useless wife. Get your own wife. End quote. All right. Quote, but I do not want a wife from the common people. Despite my wretched appearance, I am a king. You're a prince now, buddy. Your dad's still standing there in front of you. Find me a woman from the elect and pretty. End quote. Sounds like a cool guy. Now, there was a daughter of King Tetraraja of India, a princess called Atham Gyalmo, who had exceptional endowments. Okay, calm down. The marriage was arranged, the dowry delivered, and she was sent for. On the day of the meeting, the prince's father and mother had her sit down by herself. After conferring with her, they told their son, quote, she does not want you, end quote. But when she was about to flee, the husband closed the door and forced her to lie with him. Okay. Trigger warning for that sort of thing. Ready to commit suicide, indifferent to adornment, idle, weeping night and day, her bones, her eyes, her flesh wasted away, her entrails were sticking to her spine. And the husband, who still feared she might take flight, grew weary. Then there's like a little illustration of like a sun behind clouds and wind. The guru looked at them in the region to be converted. He roused up hallucinations in the palace. The husband went out, shutting the door, and looked from outside. The woman opened the door and the windows and looked from inside. Of the master of miracles, she thought, quote, oh, to have a friend like that. And quote, Padma, understanding their thoughts, spoke to them both this language of the Dharma. Quote, when another man enters a woman's heart, the husband's inner sadness has no equal. When another woman enters a man's heart, the wife's fear and delirium is overpowering. However, filled with modesty, the being one marries, such a skilled thief has no match. End quote. And both of them, won over to the faith, aspired toward virtue. But when they went over to obeisance to the Buddha, King Namke Shugchen was enraged. Quote, this Samanian beggar killed my sacrificial priest by dropping a thunderbolt and destroyed his son's house. He must die. There's no so. Why do I keep adding the word so to things? I don't know.
He must die, end quote. And those of the land of...
Let's not bicker and argue about who killed who.
Padmasambhava, always his reputation of having killed someone in the past, you know, seems to always follow him around. Alright. Different time. And those of the land of gold set up an enclosure of brick and tile, and Padma was shut up in it and burnt. But the enclosure became a golden stupa, with the spire properly rounded, with a wheel of the Dharma protected by a parasol, which Nyima Shogchen and his wife kept turning. At the sight of the stupa, the repentant king accepted the faith and entered the Dharma. Told you everything would be okay. Of the history unabridged, of the lives of the guru of Uddiyana, Padmasambhava. This is the 51st canto. The conversion of the Tirthikas of the land of copper and of the land of gold. Sealed oaths. These are all the same chant, by the way, but different ways of expressing it. That version I first heard in, I almost remember the name of the temple, Kum in Darjeeling, West Bengal, India, with Ryan and Sanat. It was a very nice week. We all temple to temple and meditated in the temple. That temple was a little bit more difficult to get into a very deep state because I think there was just a lot going on. I think there were people talking and things like that, but that music was playing and that music was very nice. And is from an album called Buddhist Incantations 2. And right outside they're selling things. There was a very young monk, or monk in training. I don't know if they're considered monks at that age. I bought the CD. Very nice. I recommend it. You can find the whole album on YouTube. I'll just go ahead and point to that. That link is to the album that I bought that day with prayers to Lord Buddha, to the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, as well as Padmasambhava, and another track called Tashi, and one more. It's good. I recommend it. Well, I enjoyed today's reading. And I hope that you did too. And I will go ahead and bid you a good day, week, month, year. Next time we'll be getting back to the Tipitaka. So let's bring up the clock. Just for anybody who might be new or anybody who might need some review, when the episode number ends in zero, today was 320, which ends in zero, the smallest number, the number on the right. And 320 is zero. So that means that we are meant that we read The Life and Liberation of Padmasambhava today. So every 10 episodes we do that. And when it ends in 1 or 3 or 4 or 6 or 7, then the little Dharma wheel indicates that we read the Tipitaka of pre-sectarian early Buddhism, which is our main focus here on Buddhist Books Podcast. But at the same time, we want to kind of show glimpses into other alternate spaces in time, you know, mostly in time. So we get to know the roots of the establishment of original OG Buddhism by reading the Tipitaka, and then also take a look at Chan in the 6th century, Zen in China in the 13th century, and Vajrayana in Japan in the 13th or in the 9th century, and in Tibet in the 8th century-ish. Okay. Oh, and we recently added the statue of Buddha where the 9 is. We just added that in this cycle. We're diving into the Mula Madhyamaka Karika, which is the middle way. It's Nagarjuna. So when there were these great debates happening in around 150 Common Era in India, in Bihar, and there were a lot of different Buddhist schools, and they were all answering questions differently, and they were all kind of guessing or doing their best to, you know, answer specific questions, not saying what Buddhism is, but answering questions as Buddhists. So someone would say, you know, what is the foundation of existence, and they'd say sand. So no, consciousness. So Nagarjuna just came in and said a bunch of paradoxes in a very flowery, philosophical, sophist kind of way, you know, and apparently saved Buddhism by doing so. Everybody was so impressed by how impossible it was to understand what he was saying or to argue with it that we've just begun reading it, so we'll get some clarification about it later. It's just based on reading the first two chapters. That was what I came away with. But of all the things we read, Padmasambhava is definitely in a world of its own and a unique experience. Rather than, you know, frowning and looking at this as historical or philosophical or an approach to having a, you know, in the case of the rules of order for the original Sangha, like, okay, interesting, how to establish an order 2,600 years ago in an oral tradition in a way that would last a long time and maximize the number of people who could attain enlightenment. But then based on that foundation, so many things were built, among them what we just read. Which is, this is the tradition, this tradition here is the same as this tradition here. This is a Nyingma Nagapa shawl, which is tied to Padmasambhava and Yeshi Zogyal and the sort of Buddhism that they established in Tibet together, basically. And which my father had a strong affinity for as I was growing up and taught me, you know, from that standpoint. And so coming from a sense of filial piety, this is the robe that I have chosen to wear. But I also love Zen, so I don't know. I'm not adhering to or waving the flag of necessarily any one particular lineage or school, but learning. Learn and practice, as Dogen says. Okay. And then these two are from Japanese forms of Buddhism. I think this one is Shingon mostly, or at least partially. Some of the... Anyway... from Japanese pilgrimages. They were gifts from a friend of mine whose mother and father went on those pilgrimage is. So, okay. All right. This was good. I enjoyed it. And for those who stayed to listen to my rambling free association, thank you. It's very, very nice of you. I'll go ahead and close now. To the north and to the south, to the east and to the west, to the spirits of light among us and to the spirits below, we send out our reverent love and compassion. May all beings be happy. May all beings be serene. May all beings be in peace. Until next time.